This is joint work with Tom Henziger. And I have also another title that I like a lot, and that's Non-Determinizing Non-Deterministic Automata. And this is a bit of a stranger title, and I would like to strengthen the point. We start with a non-deterministic with n states, and we construct another non-deterministic automaton for the same language with this number of states. It's weird, and I hope to be able to convince you that's worthwhile. So we'll talk a bit about verification, how do automaton infinite words get into the picture, synthesis, what people actually do in synthesis, and our solution. I'll try to be very non-technical, but there is a technical part as well. So what's the normal process of development? We sort of decide what we want the system to do, so write informal specifications, and then develop the design. And then, from our point of view, the most important part is testing, where we check that the system indeed does what we expected it to do. And we're mostly interested in reactive systems that interact with their environment, and maintain behavior essentially forever. And this leads us to the question of what is a behavior, and here we take the linear.
Obey. You're falling into your previous trap. Like before, you think you're done before we even read the slide. Slow down. He was my student, I can do it.
So you're
done?
Okay. So what is a behavior?
Should I raise my hand when I'm done with this slide? Should signal you?
I can give you this.
Okay, that's a good idea. Nobody yet offered it to me. That's a great idea.
So anyway, behavior, from my point of view, is a sequence of the states of the system. And as I learned yesterday, non-determinism is an abstraction of something, and I still have to digest that. So from my point of view right now, I'll think about many possible inputs that produce many possible outputs. So we have a set of infinite sequences of states because we're working with reactive systems. And as we view the behavior of a system as an infinite sequence of states, this led people to suggest to use automata as think about behaviors as languages of infinite words, and use automata to reason about systems and specifications, and then questions like satisfiability model checking reduce to questions about automata. And luckily, some people like Buki, McNaughton, Elgott, Trachtenberg, Rabin, and many others started in the 60s, introduced these finite automata on infinite words. And basically, they're the same machine. We take the normal finite automaton, run it on infinite words, and the simplest form of acceptance is the Buki acceptance. I'm sure all of you know it. And we're just looking on the sets of recurring states in the run and ask, does it intersect the set of accepting states? And two very simple examples, one of them I'll use again and again. This is the second simplest Buki automaton. We have two states, this is deterministic. On zero we get here, on one we get here, and we have to visit Q1 infinitely often, so the language is infinitely often one. And the second example is a non-deterministic automaton. We start here, we stay here for some time, and then we suddenly decide on a 1 to go to Q1 that is accepting, but here we can read only once. So the language is eventually always once. There has to be a point in the word. From there forward, we'll see only once. And the applications, essentially this is what Buki developed, this formalism, the automaton infinite words, is satisfiability of the second order logic of one successor. And but the idea is similar for satisfiability of linear time logics. A linear time logic defines a set of sequences, and we construct an automaton that accepts the set of sequences that satisfy the formula, and then we ask whether the language is empty. Model checking, linear time model checking, this is due to Vardy and Walker, I hope. And again, a linear time formula characterizes a set of sequences. We construct an automaton this time for the bad sequences, the behaviors that don't satisfy the formula. We take the intersection of the automaton and the system, and again we ask if the intersection is empty. So what is the process we're working with? We're developing systems and we test them. And we use this automata and logic to test or to verify the systems. And this means that we have a formal way to write the specification. We use temporal logic. And we expect people to write the specifications formally using some kind of temporal logic. And then we use automata and infinite words as an intermediate tools to reason about this. Okay. And this raises sort of the next stage question. We are already writing specifications formally. Why can't we use the specifications to automatically produce the system? And this is synthesis, and the great promise is that we'll produce systems that will work correctly because the ingenious algorithm just produced them. And the first person to pose this problem was Church in
16, actually 57.
Yeah. I knew there was something wrong there. And
he also posed the model checking question.
Luckily, this is orthogonal to my talk. So.
Model checking.
But not in the concept of looking at actually the system that runs forever and using logic formula to describe infinite behavior.
Yeah, but I mean, for software, so for assertion based.
Yeah, that's your idea. Yeah. But this is specifically, essentially, it's really the model checking. Even a finite state system, check it in places.
So Church asked this question in a slightly different way. He was talking about circuits, circuit interfaces, and the input-output dependency, and we have to tell whether there exists an automaton or a circuit, in his terms, that realizes the specification. And in particular, we want to construct automatically the implementing circuit. And there are essentially, a few years later, there were two solutions that were proposed, and these are the solutions that we have up to date. Either use automata on infinite trees, as suggested by Rabin, or use two-player infinite duration games, Bukey and Langer. And here, I'm going to use the games approach. And let's see a bit why synthesis is it appropriate to see synthesis as a game. So we have a system, it controls some internal variables, and we have an environment that sort of sends inputs. And whatever the system does with its internal variables has to, in a way, match all possible inputs that are received later from the environment. And the way we view it is that the system tries to do something internally that would satisfy the specification, and it has to match all possible inputs. So in particular, it has to match the cases when the environment produces the worst possible input. And as usual, we reduce everything to graphs. So we have a directed graph, and the interesting thing that we have a partition of the states of the graph. We have player 0 state and player 1 state, and player 0 is the system. Player 1 is the environment. And we play on this graph by starting with a pebble on some initial vertex. And then, if the pebble is on a vertex of player 0 gets to choose a successor. If the pebble is on a successor of the pebble is on a state of player 1, then player 1 gets to choose a successor. And as always with games, we're interested with who wins. And this is a very misleading picture because this is a player from Arsenal, but he's photographed next to the cup. And yeah, Barcelona won.
Excuse me, a question. Everybody seems to be talking about it, but I missed what happened yesterday.
What? They lost 2-1 to Barcelona.
2-1, but there was some scandal at the pitch? Or
yeah.
So this goalie...
Something even bigger. What happened yesterday?
Bottom line is 2-1 to Barcelona. UEFA European Cup.
Sorry, I'm out of the loop. Was there an email about it? LA participants?
Not theorem, but a lot of claims.
So anyway, we are interested in who's winning. And so we have this play that proceeds by moving the pebble. The pebble sort of marks an infinite sequence of states. And in order to decide who's winning, we have essentially two types of winning conditions. One is something that talks about recurrence or persistence in terms of state of the game. And these are conditions like parity, Rabin, Bucci, Muller, the normal type of conditions. And there's something a bit more remote which interests us more, is something that's a bit external. So we have this linear temporal formula or an automaton that talks about the states of the game and sort of externally defines the winning condition. So we have a formula or an automaton that defines the sets of sequences that are winning. And now what interests us about this game is, does there exist a winning strategy? Can we say who's winning from a given state? And if we're given one of these acceptance conditions, then I'm not trying to say that this is simple, but we try to produce algorithms that solve these games. But in a sense, the winning condition is already part of the game, so this is simpler. Excuse me. And here, the winning condition is sort of external. So what do we do with it? And the idea would be to fuse the automaton to follow the play and determine the winner, something more or less in this way. We have the normal pebble on the game. We put the automaton next to the game, and we add another pebble. And remember that this automaton reads states. So on these transitions, there are names of states. And now the players play as they should on this game, but the automaton is following sort of the result of this move and reading it. So this repeats again and again. And now we have sort of, here we have the acceptance marked on the states of the automaton. So we have to decide acceptance according to the sequence here. So we follow the two sequences of pebbles, but acceptance is determined only by looking on this component. So that's the idea. Let's see how it works. Let's take a very simple game. And the goal in this game would be to visit finitely many zeros, eventually always ones.
Sorry, could I just check I understand this? Is the automaton going to decide whether the environment or the system wins the game?
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah.
So if the automaton accepts, then that means...
The system has won.
The system wins. Thank you.
Well, it's a symmetric. It doesn't matter. There are two players for us. Arbitrary choice with the system, with the environment.
In a way, yes, but if you want to, synthesize, so that's in a way, in all these games that we consider, we know that there's a partition. Sort of, we have the game, and there's, you know, from all these states, player zero wins. From all these states, player one wins. So we know that. And in a way, you could say, okay, if I'm interested in winning, then I could compute that, and then I know that, you know, from all other states, player zero wins. But usually, we also want the winning strategy. And usually, an algorithm takes the point of view of one of the players, and it produces a strategy for that player. So, it does make a difference, but only for the strategy. So the goal of the system here would be to visit finite
connect to power?
No, but
that's not good.
Yeah. That was a problem with water.
No, I don't have it here.
Now I see why you're flipping slides so fast.
This is weird. Usually it works for 4 or 5 hours.
Well, that means I think your battery is on its way up. That's what it probably means. If it was fully charged before, then
it was fully charged.
Battery up.
There was a problem with water earlier in the institute.
Down there, no? Sounds like it's happy.
Okay. He loved me,
Sing a song. You can plug it in down there. Yeah?
Yep.
Happy. Now you have to figure out how to plug.
No, the other switch. There is a switch.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. So here the system wants to visit finitely many zeros or eventually stay in one state. And it's very simple to see that it can win because sort of the environment starts and it can, you know, stay here for some time. But if it stays here forever, then the system wins. If it decides to go and see a zero, then the system suddenly has control and it can decide, you know, go forward. And then we'll stay in ones again. So this game is good for us. We're winning this game. So let's try to see this with the automaton. So this is the automaton for exactly that language, finitely many ones. And let's try to play. So the environment starts, and it plays a one, and we decide to follow this one here. Decide to do that again, and it keeps playing ones, right? And suddenly we notice that we're in a not accepting state. So in order to, you know, we sort of see, you know, ones keep coming, so at some point we have to guess that we go here and really accept. So we go here, and then this nasty environment just plays the zero, and we don't have a way of following it. And actually, the play is winning for us, because the play would eventually visit infinitely many ones, but we just don't have a way of seeing. And what's the problem? The problem is that we have a non-deterministic automaton. And the opponent, the environment, chooses between many, many different paths. It sort of, at every point it has a choice between many possible futures. And if you make a guess with the non-deterministic automaton, it should match all possible future paths. And this seems impossible, so why don't we go to the deterministic automata? They don't make guesses, and they should work fine. And there's like a slight technical problem that the Bucci acceptance condition isn't strong enough. So we need a stronger acceptance condition, that's not a problem, but we do have determinization construction starting with a non-deterministic Bucci word automaton with n states. So McNaughton in 66 produced a deterministic Rabin automaton with word automaton with a doubly exponential number of states. And then this was improved by Safra in 88 to, again, automaton of the same type with a single exponential number of states. And this is some measure of the complexity of the acceptance. This was recently improved to an automaton with a slightly simpler acceptance condition, slightly less state, and essentially we know from lower bounds by Michel and Jan that this is essentially optimal. You can't do better than n to the power of O(n). So we have determinization constructions. They're slightly complicated, but that's what you have. So we have to work with that. And if we get back to games, we have a game, we have this partition between states, and we have the opponent chooses between many different paths, this force has to use a deterministic automaton. If we have the deterministic automaton, the problem that we just saw doesn't happen. And if we have a game with an LTL or a non-deterministic goal, then we just have to go all the way to a deterministic parity automaton, take the product of the game of the automaton, and then sort of reduce this general form of game with external winning condition to something with an internal winning condition of a parity game. So the problem is solved, and that's it. Or not really. When we try to do that in practice, we suddenly realize that determinization is extremely complex. And those of you who were here in February may remember this dragon. This is the dragon that Orna Kupferman used to whenever she mentioned determinization. And as most of us are probably afraid of dragons, then you should know that determinization is something bad. And I'm just going to fly through the next couple of slides to intimidate you from Safra's construction, but if we have time, and I think we'll have the time, we'll go deeper into it later. But essentially, what's the determinization construction? So every state is a tree of subsets. So we have the normal subset construction from finite automata, and we arrange different subsets in the form of a tree, and then in order to And then we just add new nodes to the tree, remove nodes to the tree, add red and green lights and all around the tree, and then ask about which lights were turned on and which lights were turned off in order to determine acceptance. Again, the state is an ordered tree. Every node has a name in 1 to the n. It is labeled by the subset of states that marks this node. We have colors. Transition is this sequence of replacing level, adding suns, removing suns, moving states from sun to sun, removing empty nodes, and add colors. So this seems very complicated, and so this is Safra. This was slightly improved, but essentially, the new construction still keeps the trees and still keeps states moving around. Nodes are added and removed, and the dragon is still here. It may be a bit smaller. Or in Harry Potter terms, we switch a Hungarian horntail with a common Welsh grid. That's great help. So determinization is extremely complex, and maybe this is the reason that the first implementations were presented only 1 year ago in CIAA.
There was an implementation in the 90s.
There was an implementation in the 90s.
95.
So 95 means that it took 7 years to implement, and then the next implementations took 10 years further to implement.
Because the first paper basically said we failed.
Failed in what sense?
It was just completely unworkable.
And I think that the second paper wasn't very encouraging as well. This is a different determinization construction that you should basically ignore, but for an automaton with six states, they had 1 million states, and then the reason that there is no sixth line in this table is that they couldn't complete the construction for the sixth automaton. This seems very, very bad. And just to add a few more things about determinization, it seems that there is no way to implement that symbolically. Usually we like to think about things symbolically, reason about sets of states instead of single state, and don't say anything. And you too. But so it seems that for this construction, there is no way to go symbolically. It's an all-or-nothing approach. When you construct a deterministic automaton, you can't construct half a deterministic automaton. You have to go all the way to the end. You have to construct the full thing. And what people actually do is they do something completely different. And one practical solution is to talk about less expressive specifications. So instead of talking about all LTL, talk about safety and reachability, and this can be solved in linear time. This is Ramaj and Wonham, and then Asarin, Manapnueli, and Sifakis did the same thing for time automata. Slightly more complicated is recurrence or persistence. This is essentially Bukki and Kobukki in quadratic time. Then Boolean combinations, and recently we did something that talks about, you know, if the environment respects something that's at most as complicated as some fairness requirement, then we promise to do something that's at most as complicated as this fairness requirement, and this works in cubic time. This is work with Amir Knueli and Yaniv Sal. So that's one practical solution. A different practical solution would be to do some heuristic. And these are two such suggestions from recent year. This is Schopsman, Griesmer, and Bloom, and Harding, Ryan, and Schobens. And they essentially say, okay, the non-deterministic Bukki automaton isn't good enough for us, but let's use it all the same. If it works, then that's great. We are able to solve the game with this non-deterministic automaton, produce strategies, and work with that. The problem, what happens if it doesn't work? If it doesn't work, then we just don't know. Either we really lose, or maybe the method wasn't good enough. And essentially the problem is that non-deterministic automata they can't be used for this game purpose. And what we show here is that actually we can, except that we can't use any non-deterministic automata. We just have to build them correctly. And what we suggest is some definition of what does an automaton have to do in order to be used in such a fashion, to put it next to the game and move the pebbles of the automaton as I wanted to do earlier. So these, what we call good for games, and we'll be happy to get better names. We're not
game
very
good.
Game good.
Yeah.
Maybe James could.
Game good automata.
It doesn't change the acronym. So I can even use the same macro.
A playful automata.
Very good. Even better.
So these are automata that can be controlled in a stepwise fashion. So the automaton can be controlled move by move. We have this game on the structure of the automaton. And if the automaton answers this structural requirement, then it can be used in this fashion. And now you have this little girl sleeping here. So you know that this is a technical part, and you're safely. You should, if you're feeling tired or lost, then you should. You know that I was aiming to Moshe, only to Moshe in this sequence of slides, but when she disappears, you have to wake up immediately. So I said that in order to say when an automaton can be used for game solving in this fashion, we define this game on the structure of the automaton. And essentially, we call it the monitor game, and essentially we say, okay, we put a pebble on the automaton, on the initial state, and now the environment sort of gives us inputs. It gives us one input letter, and we have to choose one successor. We get a letter, we choose one successor. And we win if either the resulting word is not in the language, so the opponent gave us an infinite word. If it's not in the language, we immediately win. If it is in the language, then the resulting run has to be accepted. And if the automaton, if we win from the initial state on an automaton, then we can use it for a game. And let's see that, you know, the basic automaton that we had doesn't do that. So we start with a pebble here. We get a 1, we get a 1, we get a 1. And at some point we see, you know, we're getting many, many 1s, so let's try to win here. Let's move here. And just the same thing again happens. The opening gives us a 0, and then it continues with 1s, and we see that this is a word that should be accepted, but it's not, so we lose. And this is not a very convincing example, but it's an example of a non-deterministic parity automaton the priorities are 1, 3, and 2, and here we would win with this language, because essentially we would guess that we're going to see only 1s, but then every 0 will get us back here to the 1 priority. And then we'll guess again. And the only way the environment will make us not win on a word is by sort of, you know, every time you have to give a 0. But then, in order to do that infinitely often, you give infinitely often 0s and the environment loses again. So there are non-deterministic automata that do that. And now we want to construct such an automaton and follow it in this fashion. So we have to construct them. And in order to construct them, we have to, in a way, produce something that sort of determines if an automaton answers this definition. And in addition, we have to build them. So one observation is that these good-for-games automata are all fair simulation equivalent. So if we magically get one good-for-games automaton, we can prove that another one is good for games by showing that it fair simulates the first. So this is like a cyclic definition, but luckily the deterministic automata are too trivially good for games. So why don't we start from them? And we show how to construct one good for games automaton. And essentially what we do is we take the determinization constructor and we just forget about the tree. Instead of taking the tree and maintaining the tree structure, we replace that by non-determinism. And essentially what we do is we have n separate subset constructions that they hardly need to talk with each other. And the one thing that the subset has to do that's different from the normal subset construction is that it has to make sure that all the runs that it follows visit the accepting states infinitely often. So in a way, we break the tree. We just look on the set that each one of the nodes is following separately. And what gives us the power to do so is the non-determinism. And intuitively, what you should think is that the first set, you know, you have this sequence of sets. You're following n sets. And this one, the first one, just follows the reachable state. This is the normal finite state subset construction. And all the others follow different subsets of this set. And the main thing is that if one of these sets gets empty, then it can, you know, pick a different subset of the first set. And now I'm going to get technical with Safra. I apologize. Let's look a bit in detail into Safra's construction. This is the normal subset construction. So we start with this automaton for finitely many ones. We do the normal subset construction, and this is what we get. This is the other automaton that we saw first. So that, you know, we start with state A. We read a 0, we stay here, so A goes to A. If we read a 1, we go to A and B. And A and B has an accepting state, so it should be marked accepting. A 1 from A, B, B stays in B, and A goes to 1 to A and B again, so we stay in A, B. And a 0 immediately kills this B, so we go back to A. But this automaton doesn't accept the language that we want. It accepts the language of infinitely many 1s, which is different from eventually always 1s. If we have infinitely many 1s, it doesn't mean that you don't have infinitely many 0s. So what's the problem here? The problem is that we have infinitely many different runs that reach an accepting state here, a finite number of times, and we just merge all of them together and get one run that reaches the accepting state infinitely often. So what Safra does is exactly divide these runs, sort of separate them. And instead of having just one subset construction, we have a tree of subset construction. And whenever we have runs that visit the acceptance set, we separate them from the others. We take these visits to the acceptance set and put them in a new sun with these states. So the runs that visited the acceptance set again are sort of separated from the other runs. Now, it could be the case that you know, some runs reach dead ends, some runs disappear, and then if a node gets empty, we remove it and we add the red light. This means that, you know, this node did something bad, it disappeared, it doesn't work very well. On the other hand, if we have a node that equals all its sons, what does it mean? It means that, you know, every one of the states followed by this node visited the acceptance set. Sort of we separated part of the runs, because they visited the acceptance set, and then we separated another part until we separated everything and we're left with nothing. And this means that everyone visited the acceptance set, and then we just remove all the sons and flash a green color. And then we have a parity condition that follows the minimal node with red and green lights and gives us acceptance. So what is a state? A state is a tree. Nodes are elements in 1 to n. Every node has a name. Every node has a subset. And we have something like pointers into the tree that tell us where were the minimal green and red lights. And okay, so the transition is you take a tree, such a tree, and then for every one of the nodes you do a normal subset construction. Change the subset of states that is there by the subset of successors. Do this separation of accepting runs from non-accepting. Now, this, because the automaton is non-deterministic, you know, a state may be reachable on many different runs. So in a way, we want to follow only the most important runs. So we remove doubling. Again, if a node equals the union of its son, meaning all sons, all the states followed by this node, so some accepting state, then we color it green and we remove empty nodes. And this produces something like, you know, you take this tree, this is the non-deterministic automaton, the sleeping girl moved there. And you take this tree and we read a C. So 0, 1, 3, 4 with a C just stays there. You know, 4 goes to 4, 3 goes to 4, but is 0 goes to 3, so we have 3 again. 0 produces itself, 1 and 3. So this one stays, and 4 also stays. So the first thing that we do is we do a subset construction, and it leaves us in place. Now we have to follow accepting states. So 4 and 1 are accepting. So from here, we create a new node with 4 and 1. And from here, we create a new node with 4. Now 4 is followed in two distinct sons of this node. But this one was here before, because, you know, this node was here already in the parent. So we just remove the 4 from here and sort of migrate it to here, and we're left with this. And here we notice that, you know, these two nodes follow the same set. So we just color this node green. This is one transition. And this is a picture from the implementation. Produces something like, you know, you start with one node following the state 0, then just stay here, suddenly you produce a son, etc., etc., etc. But let's look on what happens from, you know, I'm a simple node. What's going on from my point of view? So I get some set of states and I follow them. Suddenly, some of the states are gone. You know, they're told to disappear. You know, I just forget about them. If all the states that I follow visit the acceptance set, then, you know, I just say I raise a green flag. If suddenly I'm not following any states, then I die, and then I can be revived again with a new set. So that's my point of view. That's it. That's what I know.
Life of a node.
The life of a node, yes. So what do? We just take this view of a node and just look at them differently. we have up to n subsets of the states of the non-deterministic automaton we started with. Now, this part is about the acceptance. So we have to do something about acceptance. So every state in this subset is either marked, meaning, you know, the run leading to this state has already visited an accepting set, or unmarked, meaning the run has not visited an accepting state. And this is sort of a structural thing that's intended to save states. It means that, you know, if this one gets empty, then I can flush all this. But, you know, just structural. And what's a transition? You know, I'm just holding a set of states here. So what's a transition? Instead of just doing the normal subset construction, I just go to a subset of the possible successions. I just forget about states non-deterministically. I remove states. I don't know how, just remove them. And in addition, I have to handle this markings. So if successors of states that were marked are marked again, and successors of states that are accepting are marked as well. And if all states are marked, which means all states visited the acceptance state, I just remove the marking. And if somehow I get empty, then I can load a new subset from the first set. So, you know, I just got empty, so I get a new assignment. And that's it. And the main thing, and you ought to prove that this works, it should be simple to see that this works, because we just, you know, we do whatever the deterministic automaton does. And if the deterministic automaton has some state that's accepting, that follows and that follows acceptance, then we just do the same. So I hope that you will agree with me that this is very simple. From Noah's point of view. In particular, it should be amenable to symbolic implementation, because essentially we have to have n, you know, n bits for every one of these, and just have them side by side. And there's very little communication, so there is some hope that this won't explode too fast. And another thing is that, you know, we don't have to build the full thing just to start with. We can start with, you know, one or two sets.
You said there's no communication, but I thought there was some relationship between
them. There is some relationship, but not a lot. Yes. But there is some. I'm allowed to cheat. This is a talk. So we'll start with two or three sets. If this works, great. If this doesn't work, we'll go, you know, four sets, five sets. And if it doesn't work when we reach n sets, then we know that we're doomed. We're really losing. So we have this incremental structure that leads to the complete solution. And in fact, when we come to measure the number of states, then the trivial upper bound is very, very large. It's much larger than the deterministic automaton. But now, so now Moshe's question comes to play. So on the one hand, you get a very large number of states, but there is very little communication between them. If you don't restrict the number of states, you don't restrict transitions. On the other hand, you could get closer to the deterministic automaton. Add restrictions on the types of sets that are allowed to be here. And then you get closer to the deterministic automaton. Still, you know, the structure of, you know, of sets that stand side by side and have relatively simple transitions is there, but then dependencies grow and we would expect the BDDs to explode. So, you know, we have a range. We don't know. It should be something between these two, and let's see what happens symbolically. We just have to try it out. I just already said that this is incremental, and we have this family of graphs that show that incrementation is indeed something that should be used, because we have a graph. We have a graph that sort of requires n sets, but if we sort of remove certain parts of the graph, then we need less and less states. So an automaton with I plus 1 sets really does more than an automaton with I sets. And there are cases when we don't need all of them. And one of the problems, we don't know exactly on what it depends. This is not, it sort of depends on the structure of the game. It's not on the automaton. This is something that you can see again. It is not directly related to the memory required in order to win the game. And let me summarize. So we suggest the construction of non-deterministic automata that should replace deterministic automata in the context of game solving. We define these, what kind of restriction allows us to use an automaton in this context. We show how to construct such an automaton. So
just something between Anuj's suggestions and mine. Gameful automata.
Gameful?
Gameful. Then you don't have to change the argument.
I hope that you agree that the construction is simpler, at least it's simpler than Safra's construction. And it should be amenable to symbolic implementation. We have this incremental structure. We have an initial enumerative implementation, but so this is something that's really not supposed to be enumerative. Because this dropping of states means that you essentially get to every reachable state. There's a lot of transitions there. So we can do something with this enumerative implementation, but this isn't really what this is about. And then we also have a lower bound showing that essentially you can't do much better than that. If you want an automaton that will solve all possible games, you can't do much better.
What do you mean by much better?
N to the power of O(n) states.
Oh, I see.
You can't create a play.
You have a lower bound on GFGs. Oh.
Yeah, a gameful kind.
Gameful, just looks to me GFG gameful automaton.
What's the last G?
What's
the last G?
Oh, what was it? Good for games. Okay. Just make it a map.
So every good for gameful automaton requires at least n to the power of O(n) states. Now we also have competition, and this is the work by Kupferman and Vardy, appeared in FOPS. And what they show is they take the second approach to synthesis. I mentioned that we have the Bucky-Landweber approach that goes to games, and we have the Rabin approach that goes to tree automata. They go left, we go right. And what they show is that they can determine the emptiness of an alternating parity tree automaton by some rank computation. Those of you who attended Orner's talk should be familiar with this construction. They use determinization for the upper bound much more like we use determinization for the proof. While our solution reduces to parity gain, their solution produces to bookie gains, which are simpler. The complexity of the algorithm may be quadratically worse, but sort of if we insist on solving parity gains symbolically, then we gain this quadratic gap. So I just understood this yesterday. The strategy may be much, much worse. So the strategy produced by the algorithm could be much, much bigger. And essentially both approaches enable solution of LTL winning conditions. But their approach doesn't apply for non-deterministic Bucky word automata winning conditions. And essentially we have two problems. We have sort of a set of problems. And So, essentially, these are the problems that can use determinization. And these are the problems that can use co-determinization, determinization for the complement language. And essentially, Moshe and Orna's approach uses this thing. So they can solve all the problems here, and we can solve all the problems here, and LPL falls in the middle. But we have, both approaches have problems that the other approach can't have. Future work. So, implementation. This is another thing that we want to copy from Orna and Moshe. Orna and Moshe sort of, they do this incremental search, but they also reuse the work done there. And we don't know how to do that. We want to understand better this incremental structure. Can we look on the game and sort of guess what's the right level of complexity to handle this game? I'll get back to that later. And another thing is sort of the complexity of the acceptance condition. Can we say something about the complexity of the acceptance condition that results? This is very important for the, essentially the complexity of the acceptance condition sort of goes up to the exponent in the algorithm. So this is very important. And regarding automata for the complement language, why would this be so important? Because what we're saying is that the full solution is just too complicated. You know, you get n to the power of 2n. Yeah. I don't know. Give a number.
10.
Sorry?
10.
10. Was it? 10 to the power of 20.
Oh, interesting. There was a paper about it.
Do you expect specifications to have 10 states?
What do you want, 100?
No, but even 10 to the power of 20, you know, it's already quite large, and we started from something really, you know, specification with 10 states. So if we really get to this upper bound, then you know, there's not much that we can do. So what the hope would be that, you know, we could really use these incremental things, either Moshe's or ours, to sort of find the interesting things fast. And if we can do both, the system and the environment, so we start peeling off things that can be won easily from both sides. So there's hope that we'll be able to cover the entire thing faster, sort of by going incrementally from both sides. And if we start from LTL, this is easy on both approaches. So, essentially, we build an automaton for the specification and for its negation, and we can go. We combine. So, surprisingly enough, I'm using the power approach. But so, sort of combine the game incrementally with the GFG for the positive behaviors, and combine the game incrementally with the GFG for the negative behaviors, and sort of peel off all the states that are won fast. And from an NBW, both approaches don't do it very well. But actually, we could combine. We could, you know, we could go our approach for the positive, and Kupferman Valley approach for the negative. Sort of try to combine them by finding the states that are one fast. And that's it. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Even if you use rank just for complementation, you can look at an automaton and say, okay, what is the maximum rank that is needed? And so you can look at it as a kind of as a complexity measure in terms of an automaton. It's not a result of a language, because if you change automaton for the same language, you get a different rank. But it's a measure that you can use, and you can show, for example, that in the maximum you need some number, and it gives you some information. So you can try to define here kind of some kind of the notion of a game rank, which is how many states, how many sets are needed there. So you have some understanding, or I mean, you have examples where you show that sometimes it can be done. There are simple games that can be solved with indeed with a small number of states, or there are some games that require you the full. You have some information on that?
Not much. essentially we have an example of a game that, you know, the specification is an NBW. It's a very small game. It has like O n states, and we start with an NBW with n states for the winning condition, and we need n states, you know, the full thing. But now this game has sort of, it has this, so there are states here, you know, it has this sort of recursive structure. And now if we do something to sort of the seam between these two layers, and we cut here something, we lose one set. And for every cut that we add, we need one set less. But unlike the ranks that are sort of dependent on the automaton, here, you know, the automaton is something completely different. It doesn't depend at all on the structure. And this should be a quality of the structure, not of the automaton. So I don't expect that we'll be able to look on the automaton. I may be wrong.
There's always the naked game with trivial arena, right? The game that basically says my move is 0 and 1, your move is 0 and 1. That's the game. Right? Okay. This is the simplest arena, and then it becomes just about the language.
Yeah.
So it's not clear to me that it's about the arena. Arena can be always trivialized in some sense.
So yes. So on an interesting arena, it would be some combination of the language, the representation of the language, the specific representation of the language that we get, and the structure. Yeah. We don't understand.
I mean, so, for example, one thing we know about ranks is that any given automaton, there is an equivalent one, and then the maximum one is needed is 3. So we know that it's very strongly automaton dependent, because we can always trivialize and push the rank to 3. So one could kind of look at to see if the same case here is always another automaton. It's not mean it's a good automaton, because you usually blow the state space to get it. But it tells you that it's not a language property, it's an automaton property. And it's not clear to me here that it's a language property.
Well, I'm with you.
Thank you again.